Now take a deep breath, a long breath, allowing your lower abdomen to swell out, but without inflating your chest or raising your shoulders. You have to keep your chest as it was and your shoulders as they were. The deep breath is taken by letting your diaphragm sag downwards, so that only the lower abdomen swells out. This is lower breathing, and if you do it properly you will find that your ribs and intercostal muscles do not move. Remember that, will you? This lower breathing is the first of our exercises, so let us call it system number one. When you have done that, try another method. Take a deep breath while preventing your diaphragm muscle from moving. This time, breathe with the aid of your ribs and your intercostal muscles. Take a really big breath. You will find that now your chest is expanding, but your abdomen remains quite normal, unexpanded. In this exercise you will observe that you have chest expansion instead of abdomen expansion. This method is termed middle breathing. We call the other system, system number one, so this time we will term it system number two. There is yet another system and we will deal with it now. You are still sitting erect, still with your head facing forward. Draw in your abdomen slightly, as if you are trying to suck it up towards the chest. Now, with your abdomen contracted, take a deep breath while raising your shoulders and keeping your ribs and intercostal muscles as still as possible. This is a completely different type of breathing, one in which the upper portions of the lungs become well ventilated. We will call this system, system number three. System number one enables you to take in far more air than the other systems. System number three proves to be the least efficient of the lot, with number two coming in between. The best way to breathe is that using all three types. You start by slowly taking in air by swelling out the lower abdomen, and keeping your shoulders still and your ribs rigid. Next you swell out the chest using the ribs and the intercostal muscles, and at the same time you raise your shoulders and force them back. This fills the whole lung area and prevents pockets of stale air which lead to asthma, voice complaints, and often to lung congestion. It is an easy matter to practice this type of complete breathing, but you must remember that breathing in is only half the battle. When you breathe out, exhale, your shoulders should sag, your ribs should close in, and your abdomen should push up to squeeze as much stale air as possible from your lungs. Until we have this clear, until you can get rid of stale air and take in fresh, it is not possible to go farther in obtaining the optimum amount of prana. Presumably you have practiced by now, so, let us go a little farther. We have to remember that breathing consists of three steps: 1. Breathing in. 2. Retaining the breath. 3. Exhaling all the breath. There are various ratios which enable us to achieve certain objectives. That is, we should breathe in for a certain period of time, then we should retain that breath for a certain period of time before exhaling over a certain period of time. Let us look, then, at ratios. Ratios, as probably everyone knows by now, the lungs are like sponges inside a sponge bag. If you fill the lungs with air, the oxygen is taken into the blood, and waste gases from the blood pass back into the lungs and become lodged in some of the deeper sacs of our sponges. We need to exhale for twice as long as we inhale because it may be taken that it needs twice the time to get the impure air out of the lungs. At the same time we should squeeze out as much air as we can. If we do not completely exhale, then we cannot get full lungs of air on the next inhalation, and the incoming air will be contaminated by the stale air, like stagnant water in a pond, in the deeper sacs. Stale air lets bacilli remain undisturbed, and so the lungs can be affected by TB, which is not so easily the case if one breathes deeply and exhales completely. The ratio of 1 unit in and 2 units out should be adhered to. As an example, breathe in for 4 seconds and breathe out for 8 seconds. With practice you can breathe in over a much higher time and breathe out over twice the time. We have seen that the average input ratio is 1 to 2. Now let us look at the next step. How long should we retain our breath? An average time is 4 times the amount of seconds it took you to inhale, or twice as long as it takes you to exhale. So on our former illustration you should breathe in for 4 seconds, retain the breath for 4 times 4 seconds, that is, 16 seconds, and breathe out over twice 4 seconds, that is, 8 seconds. So we have, breathe in for 4 seconds, hold your breath for 16 seconds, and breathe out for 8 seconds. Naturally, this is just an illustration, just an example, for soon you will want to hold your breath for longer and have some different ratios, but we will deal with that all in its turn. You should keep before you, though, this thought: if you breathe irregularly, you are irregular in the mind. When your breath is steady, so is your mind. As you breathe, so are you. Now we will have some exercises which it is known will be of great help to you if you will carry them out conscientiously. To save time and paper, and all that, let it now be stated that, for all these exercises you should be sitting comfortably. If you are young, and have some practice in such things, you may like to sit in the lotus position, or sit with your legs crossed, but all that matters really is that you sit so that you are comfortable. Never mind about the exotic things, just sit comfortably, keep your spine erect, and your head, unless specifically told otherwise, facing forward. We shall have some period of time, some unit, and just as in the old days of photography people used to count off seconds. Kodak 1, Kodak 2, Kodak 3, etc. Free advertisement for Kodak. We can use Om 1, Om 2, Om 3, and so on. Here is the first exercise. Remember, you are sitting on a hard chair with your spine erect and your head facing forward. Take 2 or 3 deep breaths, just take in the breath, hold it for about a second, and let it out. Do that 2 or 3 times. Now, put a finger against your right nostril so that you cannot breathe through that nostril. It does not matter which finger you use, or even if you use your thumb. The whole purpose is to close the nostril so that it cannot be used. Inhale through the left nostril to the mental count of Om 1, Om 2, Om 3, Om 4, Om 5. Then exhale through the left nostril. Be sure that you keep the right one tightly closed, while doing the Om count 10 times. In every case such as this, the breathing out time is twice that of the breathing in time, that is a fixed rule. Repeat this 20 times, that is, breathe in through the left nostril, and exhale through the left nostril 20 times, breathing in over a period of 5 Oms and breathing out over a period of 10 Oms. After that, just sit still for a few moments, and see if you do not already feel quite a lot better, and remember, you are just starting. The second stage comes next. You have just had your right nostril closed, so now you do the same thing but keep your left nostril closed. Again, it does not matter which finger you use, or even which hand you use. Proceed exactly as you did when breathing through the left nostril, take exactly the same amount of time, and do this breathing through the right nostril for 20 times as you did for the left. You must breathe as silently as you can, and you must take what we term the complete breath, that is, using your abdomen, using your chest muscles, and raising and throwing back your shoulders. You have to get in as much air as you can, and you have to get out as much air as you can. After these exercises, you will have no foul or stale air left in your lungs. This first exercise should be carried out for 2 weeks. You can slowly, very slowly, increase the time of inhalation and exhalation, but do not do anything which strains you or tires you. You must make haste slowly. If you find 5 seconds in and 10 seconds out is too much, then make it 4, or even 3, seconds in, and 8 or 6 seconds out. These particular figures are given merely as a guide. You have to use common sense, and you have to suit yourself. If you start with a smaller time, then you will make progress, but you will take rather a longer period over it, while being much, much safer. Observe particularly that in the above exercise you do not retain the breath, that is done for a special reason, because this exercise is designed to make the nostrils accustomed to breathing properly. So many people breathe through the mouth, or through one nostril, and the exercise given above is a form of training process first. We suggested that you should do this exercise for 2 weeks or so. If you take 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks, it does not matter, there is no hurry, you have plenty of time, and it is better to do a thing slowly and properly, because rushing through does no good. So now, after 2, or 3, or 4 weeks, whatever you like, let us get on to what is known as the alternate nostril breathing. Remember how you have to sit? Well, it should be second nature by now. You are sitting, then, on a hard chair with your feet together, your spine erect, your head level, and your gaze straight forward. So you start now by closing the right nostril while you breathe through the left. Hold the breath a moment while you close the left nostril and exhale through the right nostril. That is, in this case, you are breathing in through one nostril and out through the other. Next time inhale through the right nostril, and when you have a big lungful of air close the right nostril with a finger or thumb, and exhale through the left. Again, you have to breathe in for 5 or 6 seconds, and breathe out for 10 or 12 seconds. Have you got that right? First you close your right nostril with a finger and inhale through the left nostril. Then you close the left nostril and exhale with the right. After that you change things around, you inhale through the right nostril, with the left closed, and then you close the right and exhale through the left. Do that for about 20 times. After a month you should be able to increase the time so that you are doing 8 and 16 seconds, and when you have been doing it a month, or 2 months, you will find that you are very, very much better in health. Your sight will improve, and you will become lighter on your feet. It is suggested that this second exercise be practiced for 3 months because it is still a probationary period, or a period in which your breathing mechanism is becoming trained. Exercise number 3, this is similar to the number 2, but we have here retention of breath as well. It should be stated now that although one should retain the breath for 4 times as long as one took to breathe in, until you are well used to this system, it is much more comfortable to retain your breath for only twice as long as it took to breathe it in, and then after a few months you can work up to the 1-to-4 ratio. In this third exercise one has to inhale the air through the left nostril while doing a om count 4 times. Then one retains the air during an om count of 8 times. After that, exhale through the right nostril, we breathed in through the left, remember, 8 times. When we have breathed out, and without stopping, inhale through the right nostril, and with the left closed, retain the breath for the 8 ohms, and then breathe out through the opposite nostril. You would be well advised to practice this 20 times a day. It really does not matter what finger or thumb you use to close off the unwanted nostril. So many people say you must not use this finger or you must use that finger, just to try to make things look mysterious. In my case, I have been doing it for more years than you would believe, and I can tell you from personal experience, as well as from the observed experience of others, it does not matter which finger or thumb you use. You will, of course, be practicing and getting bigger and bigger breaths, and longer retentions, and slower exhalations. You will be able to do, to start, 4 seconds in, hold it 8 seconds, and breathe out for 8 seconds. But after 2 months or so you will be able to breathe in for 8 seconds, hold it for 16 seconds, and exhale for 16 seconds, and to really give you something to work for, when you have been doing it for a year you should be able to breathe in for 8 seconds, hold it for about half a minute, and then breathe out over some 16 seconds. But you should not try that until you have been practicing for some 12 months. This really is a very good system of breathing, and one which should be practiced every day for 20 rounds. Here is an exercise which enables one to keep warm in cold weather. It is something much practiced in Tibet where a lama can sit unclothed on ice, and even melt ice around him and dry off wet blankets draped around his shoulders. Here's how you do it. Sit comfortably again, and make sure that you really are sitting with your spine upright. You must have no tensions or pressing worries for the moment. Close your eyes, and think of yourself saying, Om, 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 telepathically. Close your left nostril, and take in as much air as you can through the right nostril. Then close the right nostril. Your thumb is the best for this because it is most convenient, and retain the breath by pressing your chin hard against your chest, bring your chin up close to your neck. Hold the breath for a time and then gradually exhale through the left nostril by closing the right nostril, again the thumb is easiest here. Careful note, In this particular exercise, one always breathes in through the right nostril, and always breathes out through the left nostril. You should do this from a start of 10 breathings, during which you gradually increase the time of breath retention, up to some 50 times, but you must increase your breath retention very gradually. There is no need to rush, and while on the subject, here is a little note which may free you from worry. When you have been doing it for some time, and you are doing it with deep breath retention, you may find that you perspire from the roots of the hair. That is perfectly safe, perfectly normal, and really does increase the health and cleanliness of the body. Here is another system of breathing which is very good to improve the state of the blood, and keep one cool. Have you ever seen how a dog or a cat folds the tongue so that it becomes a V-shape? Well, in this case we are going to be like the cat. Sit as before, that is, comfortably on a hard seat with the spine erect. Protrude your tongue just a little, and make it so that it has a V. Then you draw all through the mouth with an indrawn SSSS. Hold your breath as long as possible, and then exhale through the nostrils. You need to do this for 20 times a day. It is important that you should be absolutely regular in these exercises. Do not miss one day and do twice as long the next day, that is just a waste of time. If you are not going to do the exercises regularly, then it is far better not to start. So, be regular, be punctual, try to do your exercises at the same time every day, and when doing them, do not screw up your face, do not indulge in any contortions of any kind. If you find that you get any pain, stop immediately until the pain is gone. Further, you cannot do these exercises if you have just overstuffed yourself with food. Most people eat too much for too long to too little purpose, and so a moderate diet is to be preferred. As a final warning, do not do these exercises if you have heart disease or TB. Do not try to hold your breath longer than is comfortable. After all, there will be other lives. What you do not learn in this life, you can always drop in again, and take up where you left off. And it should be stated, too, that unless you are very young, very supple, and very well injured, you should not do any of the exercises which require you to balance on one thumb or sit with your feet resting on the top of your head or something. Unless you were born an Easterner, or unless your parents were acrobats at the local circus, you will be well advised to leave these things alone. Supplement B, stones. This is a supplement about various kinds of stones, because they have great influence on the life of each of us. Stones are the oldest solid things on this earth. They were in existence before humans were ever dreamed of, or nightmared of exclamation mark, and will be in existence long after we have gone. Depending on your point of view, you may think of stones as a collection of chemicals, or as a lot of molecules which wobble around according to the number of them crammed into one space. Stones, though, have very strong vibrations. In effect, they are like radio transmitters, transmitting their messages for good or for bad all the time. Let us look at stones, starting with agate. Many people regard agates as a red stone, but actually they are red, green, brown, and a sort of ginger color. In the Far East, the red, or blood agate, as it is often called, is truly a protection against poisonous insects such as spiders. This is not fiction. Agates give off a radiation which disheartens spiders and scorpions and makes them seek pastures new. There is a form of brown agate which radiates a vibration which gives a man self-confidence, and thus by giving him a form of Dutch courage gives him victory over his enemies or success with his lady friends. In the medical field, it has been proved that if a person wears a brown agate next to his skin, preferably over his sternum, that is, hanging around his neck over his breastbone, it increases his intelligence and helps to allay fevers and madness. From the latter, you will readily observe that not many brown agates are so worn. In the Middle East, some people wear a shaped agate which is alleged to keep away intestinal infections, which are normally quite prevalent in the Middle East. There are black agates, green agates, and grey, but in China there is a very, very remarkable agate which has certain fossilized remains in it, and if you take one of these stones which have been highly polished, you will see the patterns of small plant life forms such as ferns. This is used by farmers as a decoration in the hope that they will have a very profitable agricultural year. Amber, if you have trouble with your kidneys or your liver, or if you are troubled with that civilized complaint from which our pharmaceutical houses reap a large fortune, constipation, take some powdered amber, grind it so it is like flour, then mix it with honey and a little water. Then swallow the muck, but only if you are within reach of the appropriate convenience of civilization, because this is a remedy which really does work, as you would find out. The only difficulty is, amber is rather expensive. Ladies who desire a husband and have not much luck in attracting them should have a piece of amber shaped as a phallic symbol. By wearing such a symbol, it would attract a man who had the right desires for her. Thus she would get the husband for which she had such a desire. Amber is a stone, but it is not very much used in the West because, unless skillfully polished, it is rather dull. Amethyst. Many bishops wear an amethyst in the ring which the devout kiss on the bishop's finger. An amethyst, which is of violet or wine color, makes one tranquil. In other words, the molecular vibration of the material which we call the amethyst oscillates at such a period of frequency that it heterodynes with belligerent vibrations of a human and causes those vibrations to slow down and become tranquil. The amethyst was used as a tranquilizer in the Far East long before aspirin took over that field. Antipaths. This is a stone which is quite black. It looks something like a highly polished piece of coal of the anthracite variety. It is little used now in the West because of its complete blackness. It has been used, however, as the background to a superimposed cameo of ivory. Beryl. St. Thomas is the patron saint of the beryl. It is stated that he used the yellow beryl for curing diseases of the liver. The beryl normally is of a green coloration. It is a stone which helps in the matter of digestion. Carnelian. Some people call the carnelian a bloodstone. It has a vibration which damps down the pulses of the blood, and it is truly a fact that if a person has congestion of blood in the head, the congestion is relieved very greatly if the frontal lobes and the site of the atlas be stroked with a smooth carnelian. Carnelians are sometimes opaque, but the best ones are translucent. Catochytis. This is really a remarkable stone found in some of the Mediterranean islands, particularly Corsica. It is a stone which is magnetic to human skin so that if you rub your hands together and then touch the catochytis, that stone will stick to the hand, provided, of course, that it be not too heavy. The Corsicans use such a stone to protect them from being hypnotized. Chalcedony. In certain backward countries, or are they really advanced? Chalcedony are used powdered. It helps to pass gallstones. The chalcedony powder caused dilation of the gallbladder and all passages connected thereto. Thus gallstones, which had been impacted into the wall of the gallbladder, would be passed out without an operation. Crystal. Crystal is a very peculiar form of rock. It is clearer than glass, and has extremely great powers in the field of crystal gazing. Those who are in any way gifted with the ability of clairvoyance will find that this increases with the use of a piece of flawless crystal. The crystal has a vibration which is compatible with that of the third eye. It strengthens the third eye, strengthens one's seership. In various parts of Ireland, little crystal balls are set in silver rings, and it is believed that these are able to attract favorable responses from the Irish leprechauns. Priests in bygone ages in the Far East would go out in their search parties and find a lump of crystal in the Andes or in the Himalayas. They would carefully chip off rough edges, and through years and years would carve the piece of rock into spherical shape. Then generation after generation of priests would polish the crystal by using finer and finer sand and water, the sand being embedded in soft leather. At last the crystal would be ready for religious use, seeing the future, seeing the will of the gods. Diamond. The diamond is a close cousin to a lump of coal. It is merely a piece of carbon which has been given a higher education. In other words, it vibrates at a higher frequency. It is often believed that a diamond renders one immune from poisons and madness. In the health line, a diamond was believed to cure most illnesses. At one time in India, the Kohinoor diamond was dipped in water and swished around with the intention of imparting some of its qualities to the water. As the person who held the diamond did not necessarily wash his hands before, then no doubt some qualities were so imparted. The resulting dirty water was given to the patient to drink, and such was the faith in India in those days that often a cure was effected. It is also understood that diamonds are very effective in obtaining the favors of the lady of one's desire, particularly if the diamond is wrapped up in a mink coat. But this, of course, is merely hearsay. Emerald, the green emerald, has a reputation of being able to cure eye afflictions, and throughout the course of time people came to believe absolutely in the power of the emerald to overcome illnesses of the eye. It occurred to some warlock, or witch, or priest, they are all much the same, that if the emerald could cure eye illnesses, then it could also ward off the evil eye. And so it came to pass that emeralds were worn around the neck with the idea that if a person possessed of the evil eye looked at such a wearer, all evil influences would be warded off and reflected back to the evil eye, with singularly disastrous results to the latter. There is much evidence in the East that emeralds actually did help in the alleviation of eye complaints. Garnet. This is a stone which apparently now is not very popular, but at one time it was worn with the hope of protecting the wearer from skin diseases and danger. It had to be worn actually in contact with the body, and instead of being used in rings as at present, it was put in a little mounting and worn around the neck, usually arranged so that it was right over the heart. When danger of ill health was present, a stone acclimatized to its wearer would become dull and lusterless. As the danger or illness abated, the stone would return to its original brilliance. At present in Europe, people wear garnets in the belief that it gives them constancy in love. Jade. Many people think of jade as a green stone, but one can have jade of quite a number of different shades. It can be blue, or even black. Jade is a stone which can be carved and worked by those who have such skill. The Chinese, before communism, worked jade into very beautiful ornaments and statues. The Chinese businessman of pre-communist days used to have his hands inside his sleeves. If you remember, they had very large sleeves, and often an astute businessman would keep his hands inside his sleeves and would clasp a talisman made of jade. He would ask the jade to guide him in a profitable business deal. In the medical sense, it is stated that a green jade could, by its particular vibration, cure dropsy and similar afflictions relating to the urinary system. Jet. Jet is a black stone. Its correct name is Gagitis. It is a stone which was of particular importance in the time of the Druids in the British Isles. A jet knife was used for the Druidic sacrifices at Stonehenge. In Ireland, even at the present time, particularly on the west coast where the wild Atlantic beats against the great rocks, the Irish fisherman's wife will burn a small piece of jet stone while praying for his safe return from the perils of the turbulent sea. Before the days of dentists, people used powdered jet put around an aching tooth. Probably the sharpness of the powder gave them something else to think about, but apparently it worked in curing toothache. It also cured headache and stomachache. Lapis lazuli. This is a stone of particular history in Egypt and in India. Many plaques were inscribed on lapis lazuli cylinders, giving high esoteric knowledge. Lapis lazuli was known as one of the sacred stones, one of the stones used in the performance of the higher mysteries. It was sacred because of its beauty, but in the medical sense it was stated to avert miscarriage and abortions. Onyx. In the East, this is regarded as a stone of misfortune. It is an invitation to those possessed of the evil eye, and apparently it used to be quite good practice to disguise a stone of this type and make it resemble something else, or embed it in something else, and then give it to one's enemy with the conviction that the poor wretch would get more than he expected. Opal. This is another stone which is very unfortunate. The smoky stone mined largely in Australia often had bad influences, and the occultist could detect malignant radiations. Some people claim that opals are extremely good for those suffering from eye diseases, but if one is fortunate enough to obtain a black opal which still is light enough so that one may see the ruby flares in it, then that may be considered to be a bringer of good fortune, and to give one remarkably keen sight. Ruby. This stone is stated to protect one from all manner of infectious diseases. It is stated that rubies prevent one from having typhoid, bubonic, and other plagues. As in the case of diamonds, the better type of ruby was often swished around in water, or even left in water for a time, and then the patient was given the water to drink when suffering from intestinal pains.